Are you listening? Really listening carefully? That's what all the Catholic and Anglican members of a 10-day dialogue meeting have been asking each other these past few days, to listen carefully to the ways in which those of different denominations understand and live out their faith. 10 Catholic and Anglican scholars are taking part in the first meeting of ARCIC 3, the third phase of the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission. The meeting, which began on May 17th at the Monastery of Bose in northern Italy, is due to conclude on Friday the 27th, with a final communique outlining progress achieved and plans for the coming months. The two main themes of the encounter have been the relationship between the local and universal church and the way in which the two communities tackle the crucial ethical questions of our day. But at the heart of this meeting, as indeed of every successful ecumenical encounter, is a process of learning to listen in a truly open and unprejudiced way.
One of the kind of key issues of ecumenical dialogue is actually to be able to hear properly what the other says and to respond to that with generosity and with interest.
Professor Paula Gooder is an acclaimed New Testament scholar and Anglican theologian who also serves as a lay member of the Church of England General Synod. She told me that Bible reading and in-depth scripture study has been at the heart of this ARCIC meeting.
Absolutely fundamental to the work that we're doing, because both our communions are passionate about the good reading of scripture. And although we interpret scripture differently in various parts, it is vitally important to begin everything that we do with a corporate reading of scripture together, so we can begin to understand some of the important issues for us.
It's also true, though, that scripture is often used or even exploited to somehow justify the position of one side or the other around these divisive questions of morality and sexuality. Isn't this a risk or a problem for the work that you're doing there?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a problem at all, to be honest, because one of the most stimulating things about being on this particular group is the level of expertise that everyone brings to the table. And the kind of interpretation of scripture that you're referring to is often done by people who haven't done extensive theological study in the past. And so I think many of us come to the table with a desire to read scripture well and carefully and with responsibility. And as a result, I would say that that's not really much of a danger in the work that we're going to do in the future.
Looking at this past 10-day meeting, what would you say perhaps are the main achievements so far?
I think probably the biggest achievement is the fact that we have established a very good working dynamic and put at the centre of everything that we do the importance of listening carefully and with great respect to what each other says. One of the kind of key issues of ecumenical dialogue is actually to be able to hear properly what the other says and to respond to that with generosity and with interest. And I think that we have succeeded in doing that in our first 10 days. And therefore, I will go away with a sense of huge enthusiasm and encouragement for the future, because we've set at the heart of everything that we've done something which is vital to the ecumenical process.
You're looking at this crucial question of the relationship between the local and the universal, aren't you? And in a sense, some say that this is the question which is tearing apart the Anglican Communion at the moment. How do you sort of respond to that?
I think if you read back into church history, my expertise is the New Testament. I think the whole question about how the local church relates to the universal church has been an issue for Christianity throughout the centuries. And the Anglican Church is simply a manifestation of the trouble that we've always had in this area. And so I personally am very excited that we're taking this as one of the areas of our study in ARCIC, because good theological thinking about this is vital, I think, for the welfare of all our churches.
How do you respond, though, to Catholics who often say, but it's impossible for us to tell really who our dialogue partner is or what their views are?
Well, I fully recognise that that is actually a real problem, because the way in which our churches work is that within the Roman Catholic Church, it is very clear to whom you speak when you wish to engage in dialogue. Whereas with the Anglican Church, it is a much more complex process. And so I have full sympathy with them in their frustrations in this area. But nevertheless, we can't change Anglicanism simply to be able to engage more properly in ecumenical conversation. So in a sense, what we're trying to do here is to begin to explore this area in a way that will actually help both our churches to walk together more fully in the future.
The other question, of course, is the whole area of ethics and morality. Again, an issue which is at the heart of the divisions within the Anglican world at the moment. What kind of progress, if you like, what kind of goals have you set yourself here?
I think it's very important to recognise that ARCHIC 3 is a process, and therefore what we are attempting to do is to understand what we are working towards as a dynamic process. So in a sense, it's almost impossible to answer your question at the moment, because what the goals are, how we're going to shape them, the kind of methods we're going to use to arrive at those goals are, in a sense, what this meeting is about. So it is a work in progress at the moment. So it's almost impossible to answer, I'm afraid.
How are you hoping to communicate the work that you're doing there, this vital work, to the wider world? I see you're described by many people as not only an inspiring theologian, but also an outstanding communicator.
Yes, and I think it will be vital to our work in the future with ARCHIC, is finding that way, not only to communicate the nuts and bolts of what we've done, but actually to get people excited about the kind of conversations that we're having. So I sincerely hope that the process that we're going to work on this time and over the next few years is one in which we can find ways that will draw people into the excitement of what we're about here. And I think one of the aims that we're trying to achieve is not only to communicate what we've talked about, but to get people throughout our different communions excited and engaged in the discussion themselves. So it's not just us doing the work, but all our churches together. And I think that's going to be one of our key goals, really, to try and find that way of getting people excited about the subjects we're talking about.
I teach in a seminary, and I will be able to help my seminarians understand a close brethren, sisters in the faith, and how they work and do things. And hopefully that when they go out into their parishes, they will be more open to an ecumenical dialogue.
One of the Catholic members of the ARCHIC 3 team is Professor Janet Smith, who teaches moral theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit in the United States. I asked her what she sees as the goals and the main achievements of this meeting in Beauzais.
Well, the ultimate goal, of course, is a reconciliation between the two communions. And the intermediate steps are achieving mutual understanding, which we're all finding out includes coming to understand ourselves better, our own tradition better, in order that we might know how to convey that to each other. And we also hope to learn from each other. We're expecting that we will find that the different traditions do things somewhat differently, and that we'll learn new ways and better ways of doing the things that we're presently doing.
You, as you say, are an expert in sexual ethics, morality. These are the key questions, aren't they, that have been at the heart of the obstacles, the divisions between Anglicans and Catholics over recent years.
Yes, yes. And those will always be problematic. They're problematic across communions and within communions.
Talk us through a little bit, if you can, the kind of ways that you're looking at getting around this, going beyond perhaps the very obvious divisions and looking at common challenges.
First, it's really to go deeper always. It's always to find out what are the sources that we used. For instance, how do we use Scripture in coming to any insight? How do we use, what kind of principles do we use for interpreting Scripture? What are the other kinds of tools? How do we draw upon tradition? How do we draw upon reason as means to coming to understand issues? And once we get to the bottom of that, then we try to figure out, okay, well, where do we diverge? Is it a difference of interpretation of Scripture? Is it a different understanding of reason? What is it that might cause any kind of divergence?
From the Catholic side, we often hear that these ethical, moral issues are the questions that are tearing apart the Anglican communion. And yet, as you say, they are challenges that are facing both Catholics and Anglicans, and indeed all Christians and people of other faiths.
I would say that there's never been any assembly that I've been a part of, whether it's a classroom or doing public speaking or being on a commission, where the more you look at the reasons why, some of the differences and some of the confusion disappears. So we always have to be true to that. We always have to be true to really looking at why such things are taught. All of us come in with misunderstandings, just to some extent a lack of knowledge of why it is that people hold the positions they do. Really, establishing that gets you about three-quarters of the way to the project being achieved. And at the end, you may still disagree, but you will disagree in a very, very different way. And usually that diminishes, to some extent, the disagreements. It doesn't expand them, it diminishes them.
You are also a consultor, aren't you, to the Pontifical Council on the Family?
That's correct.
I'm wondering, how will you relate the work that you're doing there at ARCHIC to the context of working here in the Vatican in a very different setting?
Well actually, I, That's an excellent question, but it's yet less useful than one might hope. I'm not a member of the Pontifical Council of Family. I'm simply a consultant. So consultants don't even attend the meetings. We receive documents to comment on. This commission will do an enormous amount of that. We'll share documents and comment on them and return them. But, I mean, it's a good question, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of cross-fertilization.
I suppose in a broader sense, what I'm getting at is how does the work that you're doing there, not just through you, but through all the members of the Catholic team, how is that work going to be, if you like, brought home here to the Vatican and to the Catholic Church, of course, in countries around the world?
Well, let me just talk on a very local level. I mean, I teach in a seminary, and I will be able to help my seminarians understand a close brethren, sisters, in the faith and how they work and do things, and hopefully that when they go out into their parishes, they will be more open to an ecumenical dialogue. And I think that whenever there's greater understanding between divisions in the church, that's a way of helping those divisions disappear to some extent. The friendship basis is very important. We've been talking here about how some of the best things we do as a result of ecumenism is when issues arise that we have the same view on, say end-of-life issues with England, that the bishops issue joint statements. Now, one of the reasons they're able to issue those joint statements is a lot of this work has been done, and we know how close we are on some issues. So when a moment comes for a strong, brave Christian witness about a subject, we've already done a great deal of the spade work, and we have the personal relationships that permit us to go forward.
The good news of the work that goes on there needs to be communicated at a broader level. This is often a great challenge, isn't it? And I'm wondering what else you can do besides the work in the seminary there to try and get this message across.
Well, I think it's even part of the process that we're currently developing. And instead of, like, say, waiting several years in order to issue a document, we're now trying to figure out mechanisms where we will introduce, say, a preliminary document that will request feedback, and maybe even down to the parish level. So we might have a document with a discussion, dialogue questions attached to it, and we'll get that feedback and be able to incorporate it into a more final or an ultimate, penultimate document. But I think partly what we're trying to do is devise a process that the very process itself helps in the dissemination of the ecumenical project.
Thanks there to Professor Janet Smith, who teaches moral theology at the Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit. And earlier you heard New Testament scholar Professor Paula Gooder from the United Kingdom, both of them taking part in the ARCHIC meeting in Beauzais this week.